You are listening to Radio Region, and this is Saturday Morning Live. That was diasporic music via Norman Otis Richman. We now switch gears to Amandla, An African Perspective, which airs on CHRY 105.5 FM on Sundays, noon to 1 p.m. On the show today, they have Dr. Gerald Horn speaking about the current unrest in South Sudan.
Plain question. Gawain differed from some of his erstwhile comrades in the Sudanese People's Liberation Movement, who are now ruling in Juba, by not necessarily waging a conflict in order to separate South Sudan from Sudan, but waging a conflict in order to improve and to lead to the betterment of Sudan as a whole. But he died, and what happened, of course, was independence in 2011.
And in terms of the current situation, there is some talk about this, so that's the larger context, but in terms of what's going on in Sudan right now, there's different ways that this conflict is looked at. I'm wondering if you could speak to that. First, in terms of what's going on between Salva Kiir and his former vice president, and that kind of leading to the hostilities, but then also the way that the mainstream media seems to be covering what's going on. And I mean, you mentioned it a bit, but it's of course not the cause per se, right? That this is an ethnic conflict seems to be the only way that the mainstream can explain what's going on in Africa. So that this is a Dinka versus Nuer conflict. Well, we know that it isn't, because behind Machar is a coalition that includes prominent Dinkas, and of course Salva Kiir being a Dinka. So this kind of easy equation of it being an ethnic conflict doesn't really play out.
Well, you have a point there. First of all, much too much has been made of an alleged personality conflict between Machar and Salva Kiir as being the locomotive of this conflict, which is obviously an oversimplification. I guess it's almost like a novelist has to paint in those strokes in order to draw in the reader, but one would hope that our journalists would be more disposed to a more complex analysis. Now, certainly, if there is a war going on, you can presuppose that the leaders on either side probably don't like each other. But the fact they don't like each other is a product of the fact that a war is going on, more so than vice versa. Secondly, part of the problem in South Sudan is that there was perhaps a too hasty independence, and institutions were not in place. And so if you look at the oil wealth that is flowing from South Sudan, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of barrels of petroleum at $100 a barrel, and you have a conflict between and amongst various forces as to how that wealth will be divided up, and one can say fairly that that is a cause of this conflict. That is what led to the arrest of many of Mr. Machar's supporters in the run-up to the mid-December 2013 conflict that has emerged in recent weeks, that has led to the displacement of tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, and led to the slaying of hundreds. I would also say that this characterization of the conflict as merely and purely ethnic is a bridge too far and is a bit oversimplified as well. It ignores the preceding point that I just mentioned, which is how the oil wealth will be divided up. But it also plays into the already articulated Atlanticist narrative, which in order to facilitate the so-called war on terror, which in many ways was a war on Islam, it was very convenient to portray Muslims of the North as betraying and suppressing non-Muslims of the South. And that has helped to perpetuate and give flight to this idea of a religious conflict. I would also be remiss if I did not mention what's going on in the neighborhood. I mean, if you look at what's going on in Africa right now, many have become somewhat blasé and lethargic about conflicts in Africa, but quite frankly, I think it's time to ring the alarm bells about some neighboring Egypt, where there has been a spate of violence in recent days and weeks in the wake of the military takeover of July of 2013. If you look at Uganda, which has been a supporter of Salva Kiir and has threatened to intervene militarily in South Sudan, you may have been focused on the recent legislation that threatens, perhaps, potentially, to give the death penalty to same-sex couples and has exuded a rather hysterical kind of homophobia. If you look at Central African Republic, which, believe it or not, has a crisis that in some ways is dwarfing the crisis in South Sudan in terms of the numbers of people killed by order of magnitude, in terms of the numbers displaced by an order of magnitude, it is really a tragic situation unfolding. I think one of the reasons why the CAR is not getting as much attention as South Sudan is, A, because of the oil in South Sudan, and B, because of the fact that the United States and its transatlantic allies were midwives to the birth of South Sudan and therefore have a more concerted interest. And so as a result, you see French paratroopers in Central African Republic who are now wreaking havoc, and this is on top of an ongoing destabilization of the country by various militia groups. And then, looming above everything else, it seems to me, is this hysteria in the transatlantic community about China. That is to say, there's fear that China is stealing a march on the United States and that the 21st century belongs to Asia and belongs to China. And that's manifested in Sudan because China is taking a good deal of the oil from Sudan, and it's in conflict there with Chevron, the California-based oil transnational corporation. And this conflict between China and the United States over oil, the United States' continuing attempt to elbow China out of Africa, and which facilitates the United States' ongoing project of basically hampering, if not frustrating, redistribution of the wealth and trying to create societies in Africa that mirror those in North America, that is to say, where you have a handful of rich people and many upon many of poor people. This, too, is fueling the conflict in South Sudan as well. Now, you get a glimpse of the problems that are unfolding in South Sudan when you look at the peace talks that are being attempted in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, as we speak. As of now, despite the fact that these talks, in inverted quotation marks, have been going on for a few days, my understanding is there has been no direct contact between the two contending forces, that you basically have a kind of shuttle diplomacy taking place in Addis Ababa with the mediator shuttling between the two contending forces. And it seems to me, until these two contending forces talk face-to-face, then this conflict will continue. I dare say that the forces aligned with Riek Machar, the erstwhile vice president in South Sudan, probably feel that they have the upper hand right now. You may have noticed that press reports indicated that they had pushed the regime forces out of Bor, which is a very strategically sited town in South Sudan. There's even been talk about the Machar forces marching upon Juba, the capital, and ejecting forcibly the Salva Kiir forces from power. And so it seems to me that there might not be a possibility of concrete talks until the military situation on the ground changes appreciably, and it does not appear that that will be happening anytime soon.
I guess one more question before we'll have to let you go, but there's still that kind of looming conflict, which I guess is kind of foreshadowed, between Sudan and South Sudan regarding oil and oil revenues, and even like the drawing of the borders. Like, this has just been 2 years since, as you mentioned, South Sudan gained independence. So where does that... what's going on in South Sudan now leave us in terms of kind of that negotiation slash conflict between Sudan and South Sudan?
That's a $64 question. It's a very good question. One factor to consider, as you probably know, is that Machar, who apparently has something of an advantage on the battlefield and his forces right now, has been closer to the Khartoum-based government than the forces of Salva Kiir. And in fact, within recent decades, it's had a formal position with the Khartoum-based government. You may infer from that, perhaps, that if his forces prevail on the battlefield, it might be easier to draw a border between the south and the north. The problem there is that Machar, you may also recall in recent decades, gained a reputation as being a butcher of the Dinka. This is not the first time that there has been conflict between forces grouped around Machar and forces grouped around Kiir. The difference previously was that the North Atlantic powers were basically able to twist the arm of Machar and get him to subordinate whatever qualms he had about being in a shotgun marriage with Salva Kiir towards the larger goal of fighting Khartoum. But now the question no longer is home rule, which South Sudan has, but now who shall rule at home? And that, in a sense, is a classic trajectory of a conflict. You note correctly that there is a border dispute between the south and the north, and I recall about a year ago looking worriedly as it seemed as if the north and the south were going to cross swords over that border dispute. There's also a conflict between the north and the south over the oil being produced in the south and being pumped out through the north, which gives the north something of a stranglehold on the revenues of South Sudan, and that too has to be worked out. But I think in the short term, what we have to do is trust the contending forces in South Sudan to have talks face-to-face in Addis Ababa in order to effectuate a ceasefire. We have to convince and pressure the North Atlantic forces to get their noses out of the internal business of South Sudan, which helped to create this mess in the first place. For the larger public, we have to take away our religious lens and our ethnic lens through which we have been viewing this conflict and return to what I think are more accurate lenses, which is viewing this as a struggle over oil revenues, viewing this as a struggle over power, and also viewing this in many ways as part of the legacy of colonialism, because one of the points that I have not mentioned is that during the bad old days of British colonialism, they did a terrible job, or from their point of view, a marvelous job, in stoking ethnic antagonisms between ethnic groups in South Sudan, which have now flared into something much more malignant.
Great, Gerald. I'd really like to thank you again for joining us on our program. And of course, this is a conversation that needs to continue. And as you also mentioned, we're not paying enough attention to the Central African Republic and what's going on there. So that will definitely be a conversation that will continue here on Amandla in the new year. But for now, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll definitely hear from you soon.
Thank you for inviting me.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that was Dr. Gerald Horn speaking to us today about the current situation and the current conflict in South Sudan. Of course, Dr. Horn, back in the 80s, was a mediator between North and South Sudan when they were one country. So definitely a wealth of historical information coming from Dr. Horn, and the way that he is able to put it in context for us. And that's, of course, something that you are not going to get anywhere else but right here on CHRY 105.5 FM, Amandla, an African perspective, your source for news and views from the African continent.